Well, welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm joined once again by the author of The 10th Inning Stretch, Kevin Lucco. Kevin, believe it or not, 3 weeks left until American Association Baseball gets underway.
Yeah, up here in Minnesota, spring finally decided to pay a visit. So, yeah, it gives the guy a little bit of a baseball itch. So, I'm ready to go.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with our St. Paul Saints. Currently up to 21 players on the roster. I don't think it was very long ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were talking about that the team was kind of bare. But manager George Samus has been busy. Of all the moves that you've seen recently, do any one of them stand out for you?
Well, for those that follow the American Association scene and are more familiar with the guys that have played in the league, the deal that just went down yesterday with Sherdlin Skeeters and Saints, with the Saints picking up Richard Gregetano, is one that stands out to me. With them, you've got a guy that's established in this league. He's got a little punch in his bat. He's got a good batting average and steals bases. So I think you'll see him parked at the top of the lineup, kind of filling the void that Alonzo Harris left when he left a year or so ago. So that was a major pickup for Samus there.
I actually look at the outfield group there now with Kes Carter, Chad Henshaw, and Jordan Smith, and think he's got quite a group there that really could challenge anyone in the league right now with how deep and talented that group is. For fans of Major League Baseball, Dante Bichette Jr., his dad played for the Colorado Rockies for a number of years, also joins the team. So we're going to have a little Major League feel to us with the addition of Bichette.
You know, that really makes me feel old because I can remember when Dante Bichette was a rookie.
We are getting old, aren't we?
Oh, boy.
Other news around the team. For those who've come to St. Paul Saints games, one of the things that always was nice about Midway Stadium was the tailgating that went on before games. Finally come around to give that kind of feel for the new stadium.
The tailgating has been there for the new stadium, but there hasn't been a dedicated lot for it yet. And finally, the city of St. Paul and the Saints were able to hammer out a deal where a currently undeveloped area near the current parking lot for the ballpark will be paved and developed into a tailgating specific lot. It'll cost a few bucks more than the current lot, which will deter people from that are just going to the game from parking there. So just be a nice spot for the hardcore tailgaters to hang out. It's going to be 240 spots, which is half of what Midway Stadium's main lot was, but with the people that actually do go to the game and tailgate, I think that's going to be about a perfect number.
Heading on to before we head on, you were attending the season ticket holder event for the St. Paul Saints this last weekend. Anything that kind of stood out for you?
Well, that was where the announcement was made on the tailgate lot, and also the St. Paul Saints Museum, which has been long talked about. It's kind of the baby of Marv Goklang. The St. Paul Saints Museum is going to be developed after this season down the third baseline. It's going to be a way to preserve the history of the St. Paul Saints going way back from their roots in the old American Association and obviously the current incarnation, along with just honoring baseball in St. Paul in general.
Well, let's head on to the Winnipeg Goldeyes. Two big acquisitions for the team, kind of guys that have had a longstanding success within the league. Josh Mazzola returns to Winnipeg after kind of moving around for the last couple of seasons. He had four phenomenal years in Winnipeg. Jose Sermo, who got off to a red-hot start a couple of years ago for Gary before being signed by the Red Sox, also returns to the league. Do you see both those guys having a huge impact for the team, or one or neither?
Well, we've seen Mazzola the last couple of years in Fargo. He hasn't had the batting average that he once did, but the power numbers are there, and he's played third base and shortstop for Fargo, and I believe Sermo is also a middle, if not corner, infielder. So I think you'll see those guys kind of parked right in the middle of the lineup. So But those two guys with Reggie Abercrombie, and you've got a pretty solid middle of the order up in the peg where they're hockey crazy right now.
Absolutely, and add Dave Bergen to that group right there, and that's a pretty solid.
Oh yes, forgot about him. Yes.
The one big surprise that we saw, Mason Katz was released. We're assuming that out pursuing other endeavors after hitting 19 home runs this season, but I think that's a huge loss for this team.
Yes, it could be. It's out, you know, or you can do a lot of speculating in April. Who knows, the guys that Rick Forney have coming in could provide better defense behind home plate. Let's face it, Katz was a converted infielder. His catching was not his main position. So who knows, Forney could have two guys coming in that are catchers that can throw guys out and be better defending catchers. And, you know, going back to St. Paul, I forgot to mention it. One of the – I was kind of fascinated by this. I think it's guy's name's O'Connor that the Saints signed. And he's got, like, an all-time record of throwing guys out of, like, 40%, which they were talking about. Yadier Molina's around 38%. So to have an arm like that in this league, that helps your pitching staff out when you got someone behind the plate that can gun some guys out, because in this league, it's been a runner's league. There's really not a lot of great defensive catchers. So I think we kind of underestimate that at times.
Justin O'Connor, the one catcher so far on the St. Paul Saints roster. So knowing the manager, George Samus, will be looking for some others down the stretch here. We move on to the Sioux Falls Canaries. They add pitchers Jake Smith and Casey Upperman. Upperman looks like he's going to be moved into a more prominent role with Sioux Falls.
Yes, it sounds like they are confident in him in being like a seventh and eighth inning guy. I'm not sure how else they're lining up as far as their pitchers go, if Dylan Thompson is coming back or not. Thompson's kind of seemed to be the hot hand out there for quite a while. But I'm sure Mike Meyer has a plan of how he's going to line his guys up.
Heading on to Fargo-Moorhead, Michael Gonzalez moves from Cleburne after being released to the Redhawks. I actually look at this as a really big move for them, because this guy's an established veteran who's always had a pretty solid bat.
Yeah, and he is very familiar with the North Division. He was played for Winnipeg in 2016, so he is very familiar with his North Division foes. So just not going to be as warm up here as it was playing down in Cleburne.
That's for sure. Not at least for 2 months. The one big move around Fargo that we want to start with here is they trade away Tyler Alexander. I think Kevin and I would both agree has been a top two or three guy in this league over the last three seasons. He's dealt for Randolph Odeberg, Tyler Herr, and Tim Colwell from Lincoln, then is dealt to Sussex County, and finally signs there after, for some reason, was unable to play in the Mexican League. I thought Fargo really came away with the huge deal out of this. Did everybody win out of this, or how do you perceive this trade?
Yeah, it's hard to tell until you see the guys play in. Now, how long does Alexander stay in Sussex County? Because the word I get from people out there is that Sussex County has been notorious for having a high turnover in players. I don't know how they're drawing there. I don't know what the payroll situation is, if they're having trouble meeting it, but it just seems like guys don't stay there very long. Sussex County was the team that traded Reggie Abercrombie back to Winnipeg. Now, we've seen Abercrombie there for going on his third year now. So I could see if things aren't going well during the season for Sussex County that they're going to dangle Alexander out there as a major player to pick up at the trade deadline. So I think we could see him back in the association yet this year. I'm just not exactly sure where he would land.
Yeah, he's got such good stuff that if he was an addition to a team and July or early August, it could be the same kind of impact that Charlie Rosario had last season for Winnipeg when he was dealt from Gary Southshore.
Yeah, that's very comparable.
We head on to those Chicago Dogs, who have currently have 27 players signed under contract. One that kind of stood out to me personally was Craig Maddux, who was a catcher with Gary Southshore when they won the championship in 2013, I believe that was. I had some solid numbers. It was nice, kind of nice to see him return back to the American Association and stay in the general area where he was kind of starring in the league.
Yeah, it's good to have the guys that have kind of been up and down the road as far as the American Association goes. I know Hobson's been trying to earmark a lot of guys from the Chicago area, and that's not a bad idea either, to get local guys, to get local fan interest, and it's also nice to blend in with guys that are used to playing in the American Association too, which he's got now with Maddox and with Tony Thomas.
We head to the Gary Southshore Railcats. The big news out of there is Japanese League veteran, and I hope I'm saying this right, Yasutomo Kubo, I hope I'm saying that right, guy's got big numbers and really put up some quality numbers there in Japan. Just an interesting signing, though.
Yeah, as we were talking about before the show, it kind of flies in the face of what Greg Taggart kind of stands for, which is bringing in rookies and letting them develop and not having to sink a lot of money into veterans. So we'll see how the grand experiment pays off. It's hard to say. What did you say, 38 years old?
I believe so, yes. Like 15 years of experience.
Yeah, that's not a guy that a big league team's going to want to pick up and put into like a AAA team and try to figure out if he's a fit for the majors at that age. It's that opportunity's probably flown by.
I think like 2003 or 4 he started his professional career. He's been around a while, but heading on to the Sioux City Explorers, boy, that pitching staff gets deeper with the signing of Andrew Thurman and Parker Markle, who are both higher level minor league guys. This pitching staff is really deep.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how it shakes out. It looks like Steve Montgomery might have some difficult decisions to make in spring training. And as we've seen in the league, guys get released if they had the resume is good and other teams are looking for arms. That might be the direction they're looking towards, is seeing who didn't quite make the cut in Sioux City.
Another team that's really built a deep group altogether is the Kansas City T-Bones. They add Cody Martin, giving them 8 guys that played at AAA last season and 4 more that were AA. 2 of those guys were in the major leagues last season at some point. And it's one of those things, Kevin, as I look around the league, the number of AA and AAA guys that are coming to the American Association seems bigger than ever, and it is just amazing the talent level in this league now.
Yes, and another guy they picked up, Adam Brett Walker, though I think he's just going by Adam Walker now. He was a slugger in the Twins organization. Last year he hit, it was kind of like a Rob Deere type of year. He only hit like 179, 180, but he had nearly 20 home runs too. There was a couple other teams in the trying to go after him too, but yeah, he landed in Kansas City. So good pickup for Cal Pietra.
We also want to throw a shout out to our good buddy Dan Vaughn, who has started his podcast show and Facebook show called The Steakhouse, where he's covering a lot of good news that's going on around the team with some additional information around the league. So we want to recommend you take a look at what Dan's got going on.
And if you follow the T-Bones in general, Dan's really good about, on game nights, I believe around 5 o'clock or so, he will go on, he'll do a Facebook Live show where he'll break down the upcoming game, give you the starting lineups, maybe tell you if something's going on around the ballpark. It's kind of interesting to tune in and see what's going on with the T-Bones. He also does a Facebook Live after he's done with his responsibilities on the radio, so he's very loyal about it. He's interactive, so give him a listen. He takes questions and puts on a pretty good show.
Absolutely, and Dan will also answer questions that are asked of him during games, so if you send him a Twitter message, he's always enjoying talking about stuff, his experiences in Australia or whatever, and he's got quite a number of great stories to tell. We'll move on to the Wichita Wingnuts. The big talk around this team this season has been the change that's occurred with new manager, new general manager this year. But the new stadium was the big deal that was going on, and it looked like an affiliate team, according to the city council and mayor of the community, were going to work something out to have an affiliate team come in here. Whether that was ever going to materialize or whatever the circumstance was going to be here, that seems to have fallen flat on its face. And now you have a Wichita team that I would assume Wingnut's ownership here feels a little slighted about not even being considered for this new stadium. And I'm wondering, if you're the ownership, Kevin, in the spot, if you're a guy running this organization, how do you feel about a city that you've won championships here, you've been battling in playoffs, you've created a winner, and the city just doesn't seem interested in having you around?
It's hard. As much as you want to just kind of fly the bird to the city and move the team elsewhere, there's been a loyal fan base that have come out to support the Wingnuts. We really don't want to punish them for the city's short-sightedness in the whole matter. It's got to be hard to be happy. It's I can't describe it. It's trying to equate it to living in a home where the landlord wants you out, but yeah, it's hard to draw a parallel to that. It's a pretty unique situation.
Yes, it is, and it's going to be interesting to see where a new stadium fits out here, if there's going to be one at all. I know that they wanted to renovate the entire community around there and put up a bunch of shops and some other things, and so we'll have to see how that materializes.
Now, with the way you're connected in Wichita, is it what is the stumbling block? Is it the mayor that doesn't want something done for the Wingnuts? Is it the city council? Are they all kind of on the same page with this? Is the mayor, how far into his reign is he?
Well, you're making the most interesting point of this, and this is my understanding, is the mayor's on his last term, approaching the end of his final term, and would like a legacy behind this. And so renovating the downtown area, and if you haven't been out to where Lawrence Dumont Stadium is, the location of the stadium is about as fantastic as a stadium could be for any community. I mean, it looks out over the main part of the city, heading out from, if you're looking out over center field. And so the location is just absolutely ideal. It's easy to get to. It's a fantastic location. They want to really remodel that around there because the Riverwalk runs right across the street from the stadium, and they would like to add its shops and build up hotels around there and really do something special with that. And it's a great idea. I couldn't agree with the idea more. And they do have a bond that is passed to build this thing. It's just supposedly, according to the way the mayor is presenting this, is that the only way that bond will allow for a new stadium to be built is for an affiliate club to come into it. And this is supposed to be the big legacy. A lot of local media people want to see an affiliate team here. The thing about it is, and this is something you and I have talked about quite a bit over the years, has been affiliate clubs are hit and miss. You know, if you've got a great organization up at the top that is drafting well and building their stock in the minors well, you can have a great minor league team in all levels. But if you don't, you can be crappy for years to come, and there's nothing you can do as a fan. You just have to go out and watch guys hitting 180 because they're being paid a lot of money. And I don't understand why you, as a community, you wouldn't say, I'm interested in winning. I want to watch guys that can still go back to the majors. We see five or six guys in the major leagues from American Association teams this year. I just don't understand why you wouldn't be excited about that.
The bottom line is affiliated baseball in Texas League, it's already failed once in Wichita. Why would you go back to that?
A few times, in fact. So they've had three or four minor league teams here that have all moved at some point. And so,
of course, their argument is going to say, well, with the new ballpark, it'll be different. But here's what I'm thinking. If the mayor is on his way out, if you're the Wingnuts management and they're not getting a Texas League team in, maybe you wait it out. You hope the next mayor is going to be someone you can work with a lot better, and maybe then you do get the new ballpark and be able to keep the wingnuts around. So that's a tough decision right now for the Robertson staff to make. I do not envy that.
Absolutely. And the bigger deal too, I mean, it can clouding the situation a little bit more is that the team is signed to a contract to lease that stadium till 2024, I believe. So you just can't say, "Hey, look, we're getting an affiliate team. You guys got to get out." It just, they got a contract. So, we'll have to see how that winds up working out. Speaking of confusing situations, we move on to the Cleveland Railroaders. A number of weeks ago, there was a press release that came out that said that Shelby Ford was named as the team's manager. That has been pulled back, removed off the website. We're not exactly sure why that is. The team has made a bunch of transactions since then, but we're a little confused about what's going on here, and I'm sure the organization's having a little confusion itself.
Okay, here's what you do. For those that watch Slapshot, classic hockey movie, you guys know where I'm going with this. You find one of the players, you have him go up, find the owner or the general manager, and just, I don't say, who managed the Railroaders? And then maybe you'll get an answer.
Well, we're still believing Shelby Ford's in the spot. I haven't heard anybody that's contradicted that to this point, but he is not listed on the American Association website as the manager. It's listed as to be announced at this particular point, but we'll see how that goes. The team, though, has made a number of moves over the last few weeks. Three that really stand out: Cortland Cox, who was had his contract purchased, I believe, by the Angels, was returned back to Cleburne. Levi Scott and Sean Blackwell, American Association alumni who have had big seasons, they come to Cleburne. The team is really starting to build up some momentum despite a little bit of this confusion right now.
Correct, and you have to wonder as a fan down there going into year two, and you're like, well, this new team of support can't even decide who the manager's going to be. So we'll see if the honeymoon continues down there. See if people keep going to the depot to catch ball games. Hopefully, this confusion at the top hasn't deterred ticket buyers at all.
Wasn't there a thing that Mike Vecht did with the Saints in a preseason game, 10 or 15 years ago, where he had a group of judges rule on outs and safe calls and things like that? Am I right on that?
I believe he did, but I think it got downgraded a little bit from what he wanted to do. I guess umpires weren't too happy about the idea, so I'm not sure if they were actually able to do that much even in a preseason game. But I do recall something of that sort.
Well, I'm wondering if maybe Cleburne's going with a manager by committee or something that gonna let some
Well,
people vote on.
as I think we talked about on the show before, maybe they're going to do the College of Coaches like the Cubs did back in the 60s.
It could be. Speaking of managers, the Texas AirHogs, we're looking to see who's going to wind up managing this team. I'm understanding that Billy Martin Jr. is not going to be managing the team this year. Would like to focus more on player personnel decisions. But they have not named a manager. At least it hasn't been announced to us. So, what are your thoughts about a person who's coming in to take over this job, knowing that they're going to have kind of a blend of Chinese players and Americans? How difficult do you think that job would be?
Yeah, I guess it'd be a tough sell in the deep in the heart of Texas. I don't think there's a lot of hardened baseball guys down there that can also speak Chinese. Granted, I know there's going to be a translator in that, but there's still it's going to be a tough thing as far as communication. So I suppose that's kind of a tough sell job when you start talking about it. So we'll see what they come up with down there. Who knows?
I'd like to get your thoughts on a rule that is going to be in place for the Texas AirHogs this season. They will be bringing 20 Chinese players to the team. 13 will be on the active roster each night, but the league has made it so that they can rotate seven guys in without having to worry about a guy having to be on waivers for 7 days before he can be brought up. So they could rotate seven new guys in every night if they would like to. What impact do you think that has on not only on for Texas itself, but for opposing managers against them?
There's a lot of ifs in that right now. We're looking, okay, what level of quality are we going to see from these guys? Are they going to be, you know, backup catchers, middle infielders, maybe like a fourth outfielder? If you have like so many of those guys, and then let's say most of your bullpen are the Chinese national guys, well, if you got the game where you go 14, 15 innings and they all pitch, and then you can just swap more guys in, yeah, it's going to be a definite advantage for Texas. But I guess until we see the games and just see what quality of play you're going to get from these Chinese players, it's going to be hard to tell what the impact is going to be.
Well, let's head around for
a little... Did I dance around that properly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's head around for a little other stuff going around in baseball. The biggest issue that we're looking at is that Joplin has a new independent team joining the Southwestern League of Professional Baseball, which is supposed to start next season. I'm not really even sure what to think about this league at this particular point. And Joplin joining, that's an interesting scenario for them.
I think the teams that have already joined, there's one in Waco, there's one in Royce City. It just doesn't seem, and you know, you and I both follow the independent scene pretty well through social media or any way we can. There's just not a lot of talk right now from the franchise that has supposedly already been established. Frankly, I want to see this go. I want to see it happen. And I'm not the only one that shares this opinion, but I know we're doing this week around the association, and we should be pumping up the American Association, but frankly, I think it'd be best for all involved if Cleburne and Texas would join the Joplin, Royce City, Waco, and to be named market as the Southwest League. We get the American Association back down to, I guess we would have 10 teams if everyone stays healthy. Then you've greatly decreased the geographical circle for the American Association, just making travel that much manageable. And just a lot of less big road trips that the Texas teams and the teams from up north would have to make.
Well, I think the league
sometimes
has been,
less is more.
True. And I think the league has been improved with the loss of Laredo, which is kind of tough to say because they had such a good club down there. But that was a long drive for a lot of teams. I couldn't imagine what it had been like from Winnipeg to Laredo. So, you know, I'm sure that they were, you know, on their knees thanking that that came to an end. But for the rest of the league, Wichita would be the southernmost team if those two teams were to go, and they're like five and a half hours away from Dallas. So it is an interesting change that if those teams were to join that Southwest Professional League, it might make the American Association a little better.
That gets into another topic I'll get into later on with buses, but yes.
Well, Kevin, what's going on with Kevin Lemko these days?
Well, we'll just hit that bus topic right away. Something that's kind of affected me personally, and I think about it a lot with, you know, you and I are both have gotten to know a lot of players in the American Association, and I think for you fans out there, just think of all the miles these guys spend on buses, going to and from towns the entire summer, sometimes trips in the middle of the night. I guess I'm mentioning this to get kind of touching base with the tragedy that happened up in Saskatchewan last month with the Humboldt Broncos hockey team, where 12, 13 players all passed away. And I guess it touched me. Like I said, I've gotten to know so many players, announcers. Heck, I've even got to know bus drivers. And I could not fathom how I would feel like if a team I followed and got to know personally would get into that kind of an accident and have casualties. It's just, I'm just kind of shaking just talking about it right now.
Well, it is a very serious subject, because I know that Steve Montgomery has talked on his show with me that his biggest concern is what happens on the bus getting from one place to another. And he tells me that every time he gets on the bus to travel to a spot, the very first thing he says to the bus driver is, "Did you get plenty of sleep? And are you wide awake? You ready to go?" And I can't imagine for 28, 29 guys that are on that bus, including the, you know, coaches and media guy and everything that goes with that, you're putting your life in somebody else's hands. And sadly enough, in this case, it sounds like it's not even anything related to the bus driver in any way. It's a person coming from the opposite direction who causes an accident. And it's just, you shake your head, because you know these guys are having to put a lot of confidence in other drivers, other people paying attention and doing what they need to do, but you never know. And I couldn't imagine, like yourself, I've come to know a lot of these guys in this league, and the baseball would just not be the same if something like that were to happen.
They talked about after the accident, or guys that have played in the juniors or played in the minor leagues where bus trips are commonplace, and that bus kind of serves as a sanctuary. It's a place where guys kind of bond, and it becomes a second home. And for something tragic like that to happen, where now the seed's kind of planted in your head a little more, like, am I going to really be safe on this trip? So,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's tough.
I know before game one of the Kelly Cup playoffs in the ECHL, the Wichita Thunder paid a tribute to the Humboldt team, and they had all the players come out. They announced them one by one of people that had been directly, of players who had been directly impacted from this, because they knew somebody from the community. They'd maybe played there themselves. They knew somebody in hockey who was a friend of a person on the team, and that went across the entire team. Everybody knew somebody. And that would make this a really tough situation. Again, I pray that doesn't happen here in American Association or across any sports anymore. I think this would be as tragic as it gets. And it has been as tragic as it gets.
Only time something similar has ever happened is, I believe it's, look it up on your Google machine, but there's a, when the Duluth Dukes were in the Northern League, and I believe it was in the 50s. And they got into a bus crash just north of St. Paul, and I believe five or six players lost their lives in that bus crash. And I know there's one guy that is still living from that team, and occasionally he will head up to Duluth. It took him quite a while to do it just because of all the flashbacks and bad memories, but he has paid an occasional visit to Wade Stadium, where the Duluth Dukes even played back in the 1950s. So, yeah, if you're at the ballpark and you see other team's bus driver, give them a pat on the back, just give them some support, because those guys are the unsung heroes.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, there's no good transition out of something like this, but what's going on with the blog these days?
Well, I paid a visit to Sioux Falls last Thursday to catch a USHL junior playoff game, and the timing was just right because a story had come out in the Sioux Falls Argus Leader about a study being done that says that the birdcage out there needs $2.5 million in recommendations or flat out a new ballpark in downtown Sioux Falls. So as I'm sitting there watching the game, I'm just kind of looking at the wall, and says Sioux Falls Stampede USHL all-time attendance leaders. And I'm just thinking, okay, that's obviously, this town supports sports. So as I'm driving through downtown the next morning, kind of looking around, it's like, it's a similar situation like we saw in St. Paul when they wanted a lower town ballpark. It's, I think downtown Sioux Falls would benefit greatly from it. And if Denny Sanford wants to throw some money around to build yet like a fourth facility, he's already built the Premier Center for hockey and concerts, the Pentagon for basketball. He's built a field house. So let's see if he would be interested in putting some money behind a downtown ballpark. That would revitalize downtown, just like the CHS Field did for Lower Town St. Paul. I decided to pay a visit to the Canaries offices, and Dual Higby was nice enough to kind of walk me through, as I said, show me where the warts are. And I tell you what, the biggest wart was the visitors clubhouse. For those that haven't been in there, which I hadn't been till this week, imagine a room probably about a little bigger than your average living room, with like some benches and some very narrow lockers, and then try to squeeze 23 guys in there. That's what the visitors' locker room at Sioux Falls Stadium is. So I went in depth on that in the blog. So check it out at 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com, because you'll see a lot of, you'll see the stuff that I have studied out there and threw a blog together.
Do you have any idea how old that stadium is?
Yeah, it was built in the 50s.
Oh, okay.
And the only renovation that was done in it was 2000, when they literally built around it. They built a suite level and a new press box and some concession areas. But you can tell if you walk around that you can see where the gap is, where the old stadium is, and what they added on in 2000. Well, now you're 18 years removed with little to nothing being done with the ballpark.
Yeah, that's a 60-something-year-old stadium is not easy to do much with these days, that's for sure.
And it doesn't look really bad when you're next door to a brand-new state-of-the-art arena that holds 12,000 people.
Very true. At the Minor League Sports Report, we are continuing shows with manager Steve Montgomery, manager Butch Hobson, and we'll be joining back Michael Schlacht now that he's gotten a little rest after his little tyke was born about a month ago. So we'll be picking back up with that. George Samus' show will be getting back in May as well, and we'll be picking up with Brent Cleveland in May. We're still looking at a couple of other managers that we may be adding shows with as well, so that'll be kind of fun to do. American Association Daily, if you haven't been following, we've been trying to cover things that have been going on around the league. Tomorrow's article will be on maybe that minimum wage rule really wasn't that big of a deal like everybody thought. So we're going to find out a little bit more about that. And we're just getting ready. 3 weeks away, Kevin. It's just exciting time of baseball.
Yes, it is. Before you know, you'll be seeing some preseason games popping up. And, you know, May 18th is going to be here before you know it.
An important date, May 6th, is actually when spring training begins. Most teams are more than happy to have fans come out and watch the team train. Check with them just to make sure, though, that there's not any issue that can go on with that. But it gives you a chance to get out to the ballpark on a Sunday, and hopefully a sunny Sunday, and see what's going on with your team. Well, Kevin, tell us a little bit about Twitter.
Well, we're trying to stay a little busier now with player transactions and that going on. It's at TWITA Baseball, and generally I'll swing by there once a day and retweet all these tweets of what teams throughout the league have going on and off the field and transactions. So we're trying best to make it your one-stop home for all news going on in the American Association.
And when the spring training begins, we will be unveiling our new logo, which came courtesy of Steve Hamburger, the father of Mark Hamburger. So we want to say thank you to him, and hope you enjoy the new logo that we'll display then at that point. Steve did a fine job with it to keep it simple and nice looking out there. Any final thoughts?
I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed having steak with him last Saturday.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He went to Lindy's Steakhouse in St. Paul, and it was just incredible. And that was where the conversation got struck up about doing the logo. So
that's one of those spots where remember when, where there should be a plaque put there, if that's where the Twitter logo was discussed years from now when we're super famous.
Yeah, it's great. Great ideas are conceived over beer and steak.
Any final thoughts for us, Kevin?
I think Confucius said that, I think, at one time.
It's possible. Any final thoughts for us this week?
No, not really. I'm just hoping that at least up here that we're finally done with winter and all fields up here can dry out and get green, and we'll have baseball before we know it.
My final thought for this week is I hope that as the season is coming in close, that fans will encourage people where they live and work and stuff to come out and see these teams. It's a great form of baseball that is a lot less expensive than you would pay to see major league teams. And so get your community involved here because we want to really see this to be, this is, there's a lot of talent in this league this year. And you're not going to find the same level of talent at any level below AAA. So you might as well come out and enjoy as good as it gets. I'm Rob Pannear. Go ahead.
And you singles out there, a lot of times go to the ballpark, you never know who you're going to meet.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Well, I'm Rob Pannear, joined by Kevin Lucco once again, and we'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.